didn't get to sip my coffee today. Matt Murray gets a W. And he doesn't get hurt. Congrats to Matt Murray. Honestly, my biggest takeaway from last night with the Leafs is a reminder that there are just not that very many good teams in the NHL right now. There really aren't. The Penguins have sort of aged out of this. We have Colby back on today. He always, of course, he wants to protect his boys. I wish the Penguins could be better. Do you know why? Because I was born in the 1980s. And they did the thing yesterday, which is a nightmare for people my age, where they went, can you believe the Penguins have five people born in the 1980s on their hockey team? What an incredible accomplishment. Like, it's like that meme that says, here goes the oldest man in the world, or the oldest athlete in the world. It's like, he's 34. That's how I felt last night watching the Penguins. They're not a Stanley Cup contender. They have Sidney Crosby. They have Genny Malkin. Those are great names. They have Chris Letang. Awesome. Jeff Petrie, good pickup for you. Dixon Flyers, Ryan Poehling. Awesome. Guess what? They're not contenders. Not going to happen. What trade is going to transform that Penguins team into being a contender? How many teams have you watched this year the Leafs play where you go, oh, that's a different level of hockey team? Even when the Leafs were in the crapper, right? Boy, I almost said the one you can't say. When the Leafs were playing horrifically, the entire conversation was, these guys are so much better than these teams. The only group so far, and this includes Boston, that I've seen that looks better than the Leafs so far, where I went, I really don't think the Leafs could beat them in a seven. I shouldn't even say could, but that the Leafs really wouldn't be favored in a seven-game series based on what I saw with the matchups was Vegas, which would require seeing them in a Stanley Cup final. I think that Maple Leaf fans would take that right now. I know everyone wants one before they die, but this is, welcome to the salary cap NHL. This is it. The welcome to years of flat salary cap, where teams with older stars, like the Penguins, have aged out of contention. Teams like the Washington Capitals have aged out of contention. Toronto has a game Thursday night against the Devils, right? Big game. The Devils, as has been noted in popular, they're on a 9-game heater. They're doing pretty good, right? The Devils look good. The Devils are analytically sound. The Devils pass the eye test. They're young. They're plucky. They're looking like a really solid team. That's going to be a great test for Toronto, finally. But for the most part, look at the Atlantic Division right now. Look at what the standings are. Like, did Montreal lost yesterday, so they didn't stay within tying Toronto in the Atlantic? But this is not a terrifying NHL landscape. Dubas can't afford to be patient with acquiring defensemen or making a trade for a forward or whatever. He can get by with having Eric Schallgren in net for weeks, because this version of the NHL, this is it. This is the flat cap NHL. We have fully arrived. No teams are special. Colorado, good. Very good. Definitely the favorites. Vegas looks great. Awesome run for the Devils. Don't really feel, watching a lot of hockey right now, that there are a bunch of special teams, or that the Leafs are in some way outside of the mix, even with the Bruins. Again, Toronto beat them. They've owned them in the regular season. I actually thought to myself yesterday that it's a little terrifying thinking about the Leafs having the Freaky Friday role reversal with the Sens from the early 2000s with the Bruins, where they own them in the regular season, but whenever they get to the playoffs, the Bruins just have that secret sauce and are able to beat the Leafs. Clutch up and beat them in game sevens. The Leafs have become the thing that they used to love being, the crappier regular season team that just finds a way in the playoffs. It has the Roberts and the Corsons, and yeah, you know what I'm getting at here. Either way, I think that the biggest part of this right now for the Leafs shouldn't even be the, are they a good team? Are they a bad team? Because they've clearly been a good team over the last few seasons in the regular season. That's been undeniable. Are they a complete team? No. Are they likely to make moves? I would say absolutely yes, especially given the state of Jake Muzzin and their salary cap situation. But the rest of the NHL just isn't special. And so writing off or trying to decide whether or not the Leafs are contenders or whether they can actually win or what the urgency should be night in, night out, they're just playing other teams that not special. James Myrtle. very, very special guy to me. Senior editor at The Athletic. What's up, buddy? How we doing?
I'm under the weather, but you convinced me to come on. So if I sound a bit like Barry White, that's why. It's my whatever the death plague that's going around right now is hit my household. So that's how I'm doing.
I'm glad that you sound good. Like your voice sounds kind of like that's a sexier sounding voice. That's the only upside of being sick is that the voice sounds a little bit better. It gets a little bit more baritone. I'm gonna curse myself here, but everyone I know has been sick in the last month. Like everyone, the two young bucks that work on the show who are 21 and 26 years old, 22 and 26. Sorry, Jobo, I always cheat you a year. You know how young he is? Is that he gets mad when I call him 21 instead of 22? Like he's still that young. Where he goes, how dare you? It's like, I'm 21 and a half. That's how young he is. Everyone has been sick. These guys were on death's door. Like they literally couldn't show up to work for weeks. I've just been out here grinding away, getting it done, working two shows. Doesn't matter. Endless hours. Doesn't matter. Not getting sick. I'm not getting taken down. My immune system, like we're doing something right now. I should be studied. What do you think about just like, I was just kind of on a rant about how, listen, this is not a critique of the Leafs. I think that there's been some really positive markers for them. I'm going to get into a few of them with you today. But part of the feeling I get when I'm watching a lot of these games is simply this, is like a lot of teams in the NHL right now are very unspectacular. And I know that they've only played like 20% of their schedule. So we're going to see some other teams. Other groups are going to round into form. But I keep coming away with this really underwhelming feeling watching so many teams in the NHL right now. And I can't help but equate it to, this is what happens when you have a flat salary cap for, what, the third year?
Yeah, no, I think you're 100%. I mean, just look at a team like Tampa you mentioned Colorado as the class of the league. Look at all the players that they lost, right? Like, they had
exactly.
They've got injuries with... I look at Colorado's roster sometimes, it's like, how are they still getting it done? Mm-hmm. they're mid... Nikushkin hurt, Landeskog hurt, lost Kadri, lost Kemper. It's not the same Colorado team that stomped the league last year. They're still very good, and I think that's it. And even if they are the best team, I mean, look at Vegas, doesn't make the playoffs last year. And then all of a sudden, oh, now they're the class of the league or
the Islanders
missing. Yeah. I mean, even New Jersey, I think there's a ton of parity, maybe more parity than we've seen in a long time in the league right now. And there's an opportunity that, you can just be a good team and win a cup this year, I think, because there aren't that many great teams. There aren't that many teams where you look at them, you're like, yeah, we can't beat them in seven games. And I think that's interesting, but it's also, it's kind of strange to think, it's even night to night, the games I'm like you, I'm just surfing around watching the league. Like Buffalo can win any given night. Detroit can win any given night. Ottawa, like some nights looks bad. Some nights looks good. And you can't really take anyone for granted right now. I mean, even teams like Arizona are winning games this year. So there's a lot of parity, and I think that's the right mindset. And the advantage the Leafs potentially have is they're going to have more cap space available at the deadline than a lot of the other quote unquote contenders. And maybe they can add a difference maker.
I actually think that the Leafs are in a really good spot. And I know that I can be, I can vacillate between being overly optimistic and overly pessimistic at times. So I take that. Like I understand this, but the Leafs, like you mentioned, have cap space to make a move should they want to do it. I don't think that their farm system is overly loaded, but they have guys that they can play with if they decide to go that route of moving some younger players. They have their first round pick this year. I think that there are even some younger guys who have gotten cracks on this roster that they would likely be willing to move in the right kind of trade, like the right kind of pieces that go out the door in other trades. They have continuity on their side. They still have some of the better players in the NHL. And this is the one that I think is being overlooked. Their defense is something that gets criticized often. And people go, hey, how is this group going to work in the playoffs? And how is this blue line going to operate? And can you have Sandin and Liljegren and Riley when you play a heavier team, blah, blah, blah. Which is a fair point I think a lot of people make. But who do you think is the Leafs' worst defensive forward? Like, how many bad defensive forwards do the Leafs have? Because the one thing that's really stuck out to me this year is how committed that group, lately anyways, I shouldn't say over the Western road trip, has been to the defensive side of the ice. And the one thing I keep coming back to is with continuity and with decent coaching and with some investment from them defensively, it feels like they can just paper over a lot of any inefficiencies that they have on their roster, because they can play a decent defensive game as a team and then counterpunch with their power play or with some of their stars and end up winning a bunch of low scoring games against teams that are pretty middle of the pack.
Yeah, I mean, I still think the biggest question mark is what happens in goal for them, right? So I think everything, I mean, this is a lot different conversation than the last time I was on with you. You know, there was where there was all the fire around Sheldon Keefe. I mean, the reality is that this team is what they were last year. They were a really good regular season team. They have a good coach. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of smart hockey players. So yeah, they can do that. You know, they need to get some saves. But the fact, like you said, I mean, they can get by with a Shogren. They can get by with no Muzzin. They can get by with Liljegren missing a big chunk of, I mean, like.
No Brody. I thought like Brody was propping up everything, and they made him the fixer of Riley. They made him the fixer of Hall. They remove him. And I was like, I didn't really notice last night.
Yeah. Well, I think you're going to notice some games. Sure. I mean, I think that's part of what I see when I look at the blue line. It's like, who's going to play against the Crosbys and the Malkins? And if you get into a playoff series and you're up against a Kucherov or a Marchand and Pasternak, like, who do you want out there? And Brody's your first answer, but who's your second answer, right? Like, it's the way that Riley's played this year. He's struggled at times defensively, and I don't think he's the guy that you want in that situation. So, you know, if I'm looking to add on the back end, it's going to be someone who brings some of those heavier elements that you're talking about and that who you feel good about playing against other teams' top lines, which is a big ask, but I think it's something they still need. But overall, I mean, what they want to see, I think they've got the luxury of watching for the next 4, 6, 8 weeks of what they've actually got. What do they actually have in Liljegren? Like, how good is he? Is he a top four guy? I don't think we know yet. And they have the luxury of watching the forwards, seeing what happens there, seeing if Yarncroc settles in and plays a little bit better, waiting for Bunting to get back to where he was last year, waiting for Engvall to, I don't know what's been
do
going on with
Engvall.
You know, it was when you said, do they have a bad defensive forward? I was like, oh man, Engvall's made like a lot of bad plays, but you know, they've got the luxury of time right now where they don't have to rush into anything. They can just watch and evaluate what they have. And maybe it'll be like last year where around this time, they just started winning a lot of games like they have been lately. They're 5-1-2 in their last 8 games. Mm-hmm. Maybe they go on a run and maybe you're feeling a lot better about where you sit when it comes to mid-January.
I really like the patient approach right now. And I know that it didn't feel patient. It felt very urgent when it was, hey, you might have to remove the coach. And I still think that those takes were 100% valid by everyone that made them because of the state of the start of the season and the pressure that's on this team, frankly. But right now, I just look at them and go, this is why I want to see them play Robertson more. I'm going, okay, the coach doesn't seem to love him. He doesn't look like a spectacular player right now. He hasn't really popped since his first game. But what do you have to really lose right now by trying to see if you have a skilled winger that can eventually do something? I believe that there's a lot more upside there. And I like Holmberg. I actually think that, you know, he played well last night. He gets involved in one of the goals. But I just think you have more to gain by finding out a player that is more on the precipice of, hey, you've got to make a decision here, rather than finding out someone you have, I think, a little bit more time, patience, and ceiling questions with that. So if we are going to play the, hey, you can be patient game, you said it, that the biggest question is going to be in net when it comes to the future. Murray gets the W last night. Looks pretty good. Didn't get hurt. That was my main takeaway. There were some moments where, you know, McKee and I were joking on Leafs Talk last night about how he makes a lot of size saves, as in he's very big, to the point where I almost think if I was an opposing coach, I would ask to check some of his equipment. But is there pressure on Dubas if Murray doesn't work out or hits the IR again, but Samsonov does work out? Like, I was thinking about this just from the standpoint of the contract and the risk that they took on. And the fact that Samsonov doesn't have a contract beyond this year, what do you think the pressure level is for them to actually hit on this goaltender, like Murray?
That's a good question. I mean, what's the worst case scenario though? Like, so Samsonov plays amazing and is getting big offers from elsewhere. It's like, well, then you just try and find another Samsonov. Like, I don't think it's the end of the world. I mean,
well, you would be carrying the Matt Murray contract over to the next season, or you have to do another Mrazek-type trade, which I don't think anyone has the appetite for.
But, you know, the cap's potentially going to go up, and, Yeah, I see where you're coming from, but you're always going to be allocating, you know, at minimum 6.5, 7, 8 million to your goalies. So it does open the door where you can just try and find another young Samsonov type goalie that wants to take a 1 year bet. And, you know, and I don't, the goaltending situation is always going to be a little bit in flux here, unless both these guys come back and they play for the next 6 weeks and they're both really good. And the Samsonov thing's interesting because he gets the 1 year deal at 1.8. Like, either he's going to be not going to play well and you're not going to want him back, or he's going to play really well and you're not going to be able to bring him back. I mean, I don't know what the middle ground scenario is with him. So it feels unlikely that he's going to be back next year just because you've got Murray signed for that second year. But it's so early, though. And I think that it's really important for both those guys to show what they can do over the next 2 months. And remember last year, like at this time last year, it was like, oh, Jack Campbell's, you know, he ended up playing in the All-Star game. He was so good through this portion of the schedule. But then you got into February and it's like, what are we going to do? And all the talk was about goaltending, and the Leafs almost pulled the trigger on a huge trade for a goalie. And so it's just too early to say one way or the other where they're going to be by February.
No, I think that's right. To me, it's just more about, hey, where are we going to stand in the risk level of this? Because everyone went, hey, Kyle Dubas staked his reputation on Matt Murray. And I feel like the Samsonov part of this piece has been widely removed.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I just kind of want to know where we're all standing on, yeah, the idea of Sam's, like the scenario that you just outlined, if Samsonov does become the guy, right? And Matt Murray becomes an expensive bench piece or a guy that keep, if Matt Murray gets put back on injured reserve for a long period of time, it's going to be really hard for anybody to trust him come playoff time, right? Like, I don't even know if there's a lot that either of these guys could do that Leaf fans are going to feel terrific about their goaltending situation going to the playoffs. They'd have to have just like unbelievable years. They'd have to string together, yeah, borderline all-star performances. I can't really tap into that part of it yet. It still feels like to me that this is a massive gamble and that Murray needs to work out for the credibility of the GM's sake. Not that his job is riding on it, but I do think that this is a big one because the job is riding on playoff performance. It's just going to be tough to look at another goaltender if Matt Murray doesn't work out and not ascribe, you know, other failings or other problems with the roster to that one exact decision. So,
yeah, but to go off what you said off the beginning, though, I mean, if Murray doesn't work out, but Samsonov does, I mean, that was the general manager's handiwork too, right?
100%.
So, like, you're not going to be like, you know, Samsonov carries them to success. You're not going to be like, oh, the GM screwed it up, because he didn't. I mean, like, that's the thing. And I think that the Leafs, especially when they're not spending a lot in goal, they need to go this tandem route. And there's so many teams around the league that are doing that. I mean, we talk about parity. I mean, look at the parity in the goaltending. I mean, you're playing Pittsburgh, and Tristan Jarry had a monster year last year and won a ton of games. And he's not the guy that's been in the net for a ton of their games lately because he hasn't been playing well. And it's hard to count on a goaltender year after year. So I'm okay with the tandem approach. I'm okay with, like, go with two guys that have a reasonable chance of being something and hope that one of them succeeds. And that very well may be Samsonov. So it's the goaltending's going to be super interesting to watch here over the next little while.
Yeah, I thought goaltending tandems was going to happen, I don't know, 5, 6, 7
Well, I think it should have.
Yeah.
I think it should have. I don't know why it didn't. I think it's just like, I don't know. I think it's just like habit or something. Because I think that's where hockey's going to go, is that every team's going to have two or three guys that split the crease, and then you play the hot hand when, like, because there's just not enough separation now between the best. There's not very many Vasilevskis anymore, and even he's not having a great year this year.
That's it. Is that, and I think that, you know, probably when I started this talk, I thought this is going to go the way of running backs. Is it was always the workhorse running back, and you wanted to have the lead back, and everyone believed this was the most important thing, was to have the number one guy, and LaDainian Tomlinson, like, oh God, you had to have that, you had to have the Eric Dickerson. And now it has become, no, you have to have the Thunder and Lightning. You have to have the two guys at minimum. So I don't think that's the issue for me. It is more just about the actual contract of it, the level of risk that they took on taking Matt Murray's deal and not having Ottawa eat more of that money, and what it looks like next year if, yeah, you do hit on a Samsonov and you want to pay him some type of a reasonable contract, but now you can't because you have to pay him the $4.5 million, and now you don't have the appetite to do that. But you're dead right. Like, this is the strongest argument Dubas has, and this is why people couldn't have gotten that upset about Murray during the offseason, or why so many people came around to it. It's like, what did you want the other option to be? This is what I keep saying to people when they go, they need to trade for a goaltender this year. I'm like, who is that goaltender? Like, yeah. Who is that person that you want them to bring in? Because you look at the available guys or the potential guys who are going to be available. Think about how many people advocated for John Gibson. Think about how many people advocated for re-signing Jack Campbell. Like, yeah.
Kemper. I know exactly.
Kemper's
exactly.
Been decent, though. Kemper's been all right.
It's all the commitment to a lot of term and a lot of dollars.
Yeah,
and
of course it is.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that
if they had Gibson right now and he had, you know, at least with Murray, and correct, I don't have it in front of me. I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, but I think mm-hmm. the Murray buyout is not that bad. Like, I think that's
a you thing.
That could potentially be the way that Ottawa did his deals. It's heavily backloaded, so there's tons of salary at the end of the deal. And in contracts like that, when you buy them out, the cap hit is more favorable because you're eating more on the buyout, I believe. So I think it would be, I think it's a potential option. You'd have to have some dead money on the cap, but you wouldn't be looking at 4.7.
Dude, here's the thing. This is your purview. I expect you to tweet that later today. Okay? Like, don't be asking me. You're James Myrtle. You came on my show asking me about salary cap stuff. Like, no. You asked me about hot takes. I'll ask you about the cap. That's the dynamic that has to happen here, all right?
Yeah. How do you think that's going to go over if I tweet out Matt Murray's buyout the day after he wins the big game against Pittsburgh? Can you imagine what my replies look like if I do that?
Hey, it's fine. Who cares about the replies? The replies are mostly just people who are mad about something anyways. You just ended up catching the little bit of whatever they're mad about that day. So what do you do with Robertson, by the way? Kind of getting back to that, like, if it's you, what do you think is going to end up happening here?
I like what you're saying, in that especially now that you've got like the breathing room of you've won some games, you've gone on a little stretch, I would just sprinkle him through with the lineup, play him with in different situations, make sure he's getting 9, 10, 11 minutes every night, and see what you've got. You know, give him at least a month where he's playing a lot.
That's it.
You know, you look at his production, I think he's got 5 points in 9 games or something like that. Like, that's not bad for a 21-year-old guy. You know, there's been some signs of, I remember coming out of like the early games of the season, I remember Bourne was talking about Robertson and how his skating looks a little bit different. He's got a degree of separation. Like, he looks better than last year. He looks closer to being an NHL player. He's still so young that he's got, I think the thing too that you need to keep in mind is that you don't want to do this all year where he's sitting a lot and he's barely playing. And at some point, if you're not going to use him, you might as well send him to the Marlies and let him play 20 minutes a night and just dominate down there, because that's going to be better for his development than not playing.
Yeah, James, this is where I'm at with it, is 9, 10, 11 minutes. Sure, whatever. Just 9, 10, 11 games in a row. Let him play the games in a row. He's coming in. He's coming out. This is actually one of the... This is one of, I guess, a worry about a team that's trying to win and develop at the same time, is that you get caught midstream with some of it. And I don't know. I actually feel like Robertson, again, finding out what he is more important than finding out who some of the other players are down the lineup. But if you're Sheldon Keefe and you had people in the media talking about you potentially losing your job a couple of weeks ago, you probably feel less inclined to give a rookie more wiggle room, right? Like, there's the pressure of winning now balanced with the pressure of winning later and developing some of these younger guys, which frankly, like, Toronto has not done a really good job of. And the domino that I think is really interesting is, well, this is a two-parter. One is, how long do you think Brody is supposed to be out? Because it's very vague and like oblique. The only track record that I have for it this year is the Tavares injury, and he bounced back immediately and looked completely fine and has been the Leafs' best player despite it having it in camp. But when Brody comes back, I kind of feel like it's going to be Sandin coming out. And now you have this conversation around two of your younger players.
Mm. Well, and with Sandin, there's history there too, where like part of the subtext of him not being at camp and the way the contract went was he's not super happy with the way that, you know, the games that he's missed and not playing in the playoffs and, you know, all those kinds of things. So that one would be, I think, trickier than Robertson, where, you know, the player's going to be upset about that. But I think you're right. I mean, with the way that he's played and with the way that Ben has played, I mean, it's probably going to have to be some kind of a rotation. As for the Brody injury, I mean, the oblique is one of those ones where, like, the degree of severity can, like, be, it can be hugely different, right? So it could be anything from, like, 2 weeks to 4 kind of thing. So, opens the door a little bit for Sandin to improve his performance. But I mean, even if he does play well, I mean, someone's going to have to come out, right? So maybe you do it based on opponent. Maybe it's some kind of a rotation where it's Ben and Sandin or something like that. But that's a good point. But that's where the Leafs want to get, though, right? Where they've got the depth, where you're sitting good players night to night. It's just the question with Robertson is he doesn't require waivers to go down.
Yep.
If you're not using him enough, just cycle him back and forth. Like, I thought coming into this year that Robertson was going to play 40, 45 games for the Leafs and 40, 45 games for the Marlies, and that was fine for his age and for where he's at. And it hasn't played out that way yet, but I don't think it's a problem if they get there and that's what happens. Like, I don't think he's a quote-unquote bust if he goes down and plays a lot with the Marlies right now.
No, his career is not going to be decided when he's 21 years old, but and your point is a good one of you want to have good players out of your lineup. You want to be a deep hockey team. It was one of the things, like, even look how it's paying dividends for them so far this year, having Jordy Benn be able to step in. And mm-hmm. that, and he's looked fine, right? He came in as the team's seventh defenseman. I just look at the history of this group, and I've made this point many times on Leafs Talk, but they like having one of those physical guys on their blue line. And you go year over year over year through Dubas's tenure, and they like having the sixth defenseman who has some punch, who goes into a corner and someone has to look over their shoulder a little bit.
Lyubushkin.
Yeah, exactly, right? They covet those kind of guys, and it's hard for me to see a scenario where down the stretch of the season, they don't prefer a Jamie Benn, or that they don't add on this blue line and somewhere or another Rasmus Sandin gets bubbled out. And I don't know, based on the negotiations from this past offseason, I have a hard time believing he's going to be thrilled about the idea of, hey, you're in for one game, hey, you're out for one game, hey, you're in for one game, you're out for one game. And hey, actually, now we're going to take a look at Timothy Liljegren on the second power play, and you know, you're going to lose some of that time. It feels a little... like, you want to have good players, you want to have good depth, and I probably sound like a media guy who's creating problems right now, but the idea that you have two players who are on the verge of really wanting to have consistency in the NHL with Robertson and Sandin feels like the only kind of players you don't really want bubbling out of your roster or in and out of your roster. They're not in their first year, right? This isn't the first year of Sandin. This is the fourth year of Sandin. So I just
would imagine... counter to that needs to be like play better though, right? Like if he's playing really, really well, then he's not coming out. Yeah.
Correct.
And if you're the Leafs, like the focus of this year is not making Sandin happy. The focus of this year is winning and finally getting over the hump. So if he's unhappy at the end of the year, like you'll deal with that then, right? So for now, you're going to focus on trying to be the best team that you can.
Yeah, I think that's one of the difficult things about this team and talking about them is it's impossible not to look forward because the regular season is it's just testing ground for the playoffs, right? And so every conversation you have, you end up stretching out, well, what about a year from now if Sandin's gone and Robertson's gone? What does that mean for cheap contracts around the court? It's like that's the state of purgatory with this team. So let's just focus on one thing that's right now. How long do you stick with these new lines? Because it feels like an inevitability that Keefe will eventually go back to Matthews Marner, but... I really loved last night.
I'm on board with, I think that Marner makes Tavares so much better. And I'd like to see, there were times, remember early on, Nylander played so much with Matthews, like, and they've got something too. And it's a little bit different of a dynamic than Marner and Matthews. And I wonder if you can get, I don't know, if you can get that back, and Nylander's at a different place in his career and the way that he plays than he was when he used to play with Matthews regularly. I just wonder if there's something there, and I would experiment with who's on the left side as well. Like I wonder if you could try like a Yarncroc with Nylander and Matthews, or like just like try some different combinations. I mean, nobody would have guessed that Dennis Malgin was going to be the answer on the fourth line with Kampf and Zach Aston-Reese, but he has been. And I think that Keefe has to go a little bit mad scientist, I think. But I do really, really like the way that Tavares plays with Marner. I just think that Marner is able to get him all those looks below the hash marks in the offensive zone where he's deadly. And, you know, we saw it, we've seen it a ton when they've played together. So I would give them a stretch together. And I know that Matthews and Marner love to play together, and I know they had the huge year last year, but maybe what makes this team more dangerous and harder to shut down in the playoffs is splitting up your two biggest weapons and making Nylander and Tavares more than they're going to be when they're playing with each other.
Here's the thing. Even from an optic standpoint, I think it's a really great thing because those two guys, when they're trying to transition into this like new, hey, you are now bona fide members of the leadership structure. This is no longer babysitters. This is no longer guys above you. You are no longer young by NHL standards. The idea that the two of them would welcome, embrace, and excel in roles apart, I think is just good for the dynamic of the team. It might make the team more dangerous come playoff time, like you just mentioned. It might actually be the higher upside thing. But this is what people have been dying for is, hey, a little bit of sacrifice from your stars, and this is what that is to a degree, but also a different look, being open to a different idea. It's the one thing that, for whatever reason, they have not been open to explore over the past couple of years. And yeah, I think that part of why I enjoyed it so much was not only was it effective, but it just felt like a bit refreshing.
Yeah. And so like, why is it any different than say, play the hot goaltender? I mean, have two looks to your lineup and like run with this. Like they've been winning some games. Like you said, they look great last night in Pittsburgh. Just go with this until it doesn't look good anymore. And then you can always go back to what you had. And it'll give you part of the problem, I think, that, and I think one of the legitimate criticisms of Sheldon Keefe is he's stuck with something for such long stretches of the regular season. Like remember the Canadian division year, that year, like they had the same lineup and the same D pairs for huge long stretches of the season.
The Columbus playoff series with the just loading up the top line thing and just the inflexibility of ever moving off of it. Like, yeah, there are those things.
But you know, that Canadian division season, they played the same lines and the same D pairs. And then when it wasn't working for stretches against Montreal and they started changing things, the players had never played in those situations. Like they had. So I think that if you can have two or three different looks to your lineup and the players feel comfortable that, yeah, we've done this before, we've won games playing like this, like get back to that where you have a comfortability where it's not just Matthews and Marner and Tavares and Nylander, and there's no other options if things don't work out for you. Like I think that over the course of the rest of the year, they should do half their remaining games with Matthews and Marner split up and half of them together. Mm. However that plays out, I think that's what they should do.
I think that's, again, smart. It at least gives you the flexibility of being able to move those guys around. Like, Keefe loves throwing the lines in the blender, which is weird because, yeah, you're right. He has had those seasons where he just wouldn't do anything about it. And now it seems like any given night, there's different guys in different spots and he can't keep one group the same. Like, that's just been the way it is. But you're right. I think come playoff time, the idea of you not knowing exactly what your opponent is going to throw at you and where the Leafs' top forwards are going to be, I just don't understand how that couldn't be an advantage for them. You know, like they have enough reps together, Matthews, Marner, Bunting, especially, that you should feel pretty confident what that group's going to put together. The one part of this is like Matthews just has not been scoring 5-on-5, which also really helps justify this move. Like if you're Sheldon Keefe and those guys are leading the league in 5-on-5 points and they're having their regular year, I don't think that he can do this. Do you have a Matthews theory? Like, I know people are pointing to like shooting percentages, but it feels like a little bit more than that to me.
He's not heard. Like there's not anything like that. There's nothing that's,
I don't think that's what it is.
No, I don't know. He's just out of the rhythm a little bit. And I don't have the data on this, but it seems to me that he's shooting kind of from a little bit further out. Like there's been a lot more on the power play. We've seen him like score goals from the blue line, and it seems like they're trying to move him around a little bit. And he talked about like the other team sitting on top of him and really kind of playing him almost like a shadow situation. He mentioned that a couple of weeks ago. I don't know, but it's not the sexiest answer, but if you look, the shooting percentage, if he was at his career norm shooting percentage, he would be on pace for 60 goals right now. So the shooting percentage is a really big piece of it, even though to the eye test, it might look like he's not where it feels like he should be.
Hmm. That's tough to swallow though. You're like, if the shooting percentage is normal 60, you're like, maybe he is getting too much criticism. I'm open to thinking that. There just have been way too many games where he does not look fully engaged. He doesn't look like his normal self. And
well, yeah, he's not dominating on the back check the way that we saw last year. Like he's not,
or forecheck.
The possession last year was just like unbelievable for that line. And Matthews drove so much of it and so many takeaways and just like just dominating shifts where the other team couldn't handle that line. And that's to me is what's missing more than the goals. Cause I think the goals are going to come for sure.
Yep.
Like he's going to get 50 if he's healthy. Like there's just no question about it. Maybe he won't get 60 just because, you know, it's hard to do, but where is the beast two way big strong centerman? I mean, that's the thing that I think is missing a little bit more than the goals.
Man, last year we were talking a lot about how he was starting to really weaponize his size, and I haven't felt that this year as much. And I get that when we start talking about things like feel or this or that, that it can be a little bit tougher to describe. But yeah, this is not the same guy from a year ago. And I'd be hard pressed to have a lot of people tell me that they feel differently than that. Okay, last two things. One, bunting. So he gets on the score sheet last night. He does the thing he said he needed to do, which was get back into the front of the net. He bangs the one home. That's awesome. He gets the perfect feed from Matthews. He finishes the other. Do you feel like there is actually a significant degree that this guy could change his contract? Again, I know we're doing the long-term forecast thing, but it does feel like a part of it. He hasn't looked like the guy we saw last year. He hasn't been the 60-point pace guy.
No.
They've tried him down the lineup, and frankly, when they've done that, to me, he's looked pretty invisible at times. Like, it seems very clear he doesn't drive a line the way that, if we're going to do the Hyman comparisons, that Zach Hyman could when you put him down the lineup. Do you feel even, like, at this point, given the information that we have about the player, that a really great year or a really good year could in some way, like, actually significantly impact what type of deal he's going to be looking at from the Leafs?
I think the only way that it can be impacted is negatively, and then it comes down. I mean, I think that the things you're talking about, and I mean, if he ends the year where he's got 39 points or something like that, you're not giving him a 7-year contract.
Nobody's doing that anyway.
Yeah, I know, but it's just one of those things that's been floated out there. I mean, probably by the player side, I don't know. The only way that might be interesting is if you get like a really low cap hit, but I think you're right. I mean, I think that he's going to be hard pressed to duplicate what happened last year. That's probably going to be his career year for, you know, the rest of his career.
Yep.
He's not a super young guy. I like the idea of bringing him back, but that's probably going to be one where you're going to wait it out. You're going to see how the season goes. You're going to see how the playoffs go. I wouldn't be in any rush to sign him and just keep saying to him, like, we really like you. We really want you to come back. We know you're a local guy. But let's see where things land. And it might even be one of those things where they need to go to free agency and just see what other offers are out there for him and see how close you feel comfortable getting. And that might be what it comes down to. I mean, something like that sort of happened with Labushkin, where the Leafs really liked him, but they couldn't get to the number that camp wanted. And then they went to free agency and they're like, well, maybe he won't get what he thinks he's going to get. And then he did, you know, and then Buffalo, it's 4 years at 2.75.
He's healthy scratch.
That might be the position that I think he's hurt, isn't he, in Buffalo?
Oh, is he? Okay. But I just saw that he was scratched, and I thought it was just
he's been banged up, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it could be one of those situations where with Bunting, it's just he's a hard guy to put a number to. So, like, I could see, you know, you go into that, if you try to go into that negotiation right now, like, what are you negotiating around? Like, you know, his camp's going to say, like, they had 60 points last year, and the Leafs are going to say, yeah, but
who cares?
That's not really what he is. Yeah.
Mm. No, seriously, I really don't mean to be so harsh, but if I was the Leafs, I would hold extremely firm on a pretty low number, regardless of the term, frankly, and say, yeah, you're from here, and you get an opportunity to play with those players, and that's a pretty awesome treat for you. You want to be from here. You want to be known. You want to continue to perform with good players. You want to be competitive. That's the sell. Because to me, the idea of locking in those players, even long-term contracts, especially not knowing like what the future is of Matthews, what the future is of Marner or Nylander, yep, with that concrete knowledge, there's just no way that I'm tying up. Like when I saw those same, I don't know if I want to call them reports. I don't even remember what they were. It felt like just like Twitter smoke where it was, hey, Bunting might get a long-term deal soon. I went, what? Like that's lunacy. This is like the very worst time to be negotiating with him. And then you remember what you said, which is that the player side of things can leak things too.
I mean, don't forget, you know, Matthew Nyes is coming and who knows about Robertson. And I mean, like, you don't want to sign Bunting to a 6-year deal. And then
James,
all of a sudden, one of your kids pops is, I know, but yeah. Anyway, it was out there. So that's why we're talking about it.
Yeah. So last thing, did you see Mike Greer's soliloquy on trading Carlson?
I saw a little bit of it. Yeah.
Okay. It was a lot, but like, my friend was reading it to me and I went, this is an article or this is Greer? And he goes, no, this is all Greer. It was so long. It's actually kind of astounding. There's a new position. I can't remember who else did this the other day. There was another general manager that talked publicly about trading their player and was very open to the idea of them improving their value. I think it was Rutherford in Vancouver where they were talking about Bo Horvat, where he said, hey, it's a win-win for us. He plays great. He plays good for our team, and if he isn't for our team, we're going to end up having more value in trading him. I like this new transparency from GMs, not pretending like we're crazy for entertaining the idea of bad teams trading good players. But do you think that there could be, with that cap space and what the Leafs are doing, a scenario that Carlson makes sense for the Leafs? Let's get a little buzzy. Come on, James. Why not, James?
Because there's 4 years left, and his deal's 11.5, I think. Uh-huh. Like, he's got one of the biggest cap hits in the league.
Yeah,
so
but you don't think the Sharks are eating some of that? They're eating some.
No, they are, but yeah. I mean, they would have to eat half for you to think about it. And the other thing, like, look at how many seasons has Carlson played more than 58 games the last 4 years.
Well, that's Mike Greer's going to the media and doing an hour on why you should trade for him.
Like, well, I think he should, good. But... Yeah. But I don't think Carlson's played 60 games in like a long time. So you're not, even if you're getting him at a half, and even though he's looked really great and he's been fantastic for my hockey pool this year, and you know, like he's still a good player, but you got four more years at a big number. And for a guy who's had so many injuries and who doesn't play a full season, and he's not exactly what the Leafs need, right? Like what we're talking about is
a really good player.
Well, I think that they need, on the back end, they need a guy that can bring some physicality and bring some strength. And, you know, Carlson is a fantastic player, but they have, you know, Riley is the Leafs Carlson. They have that guy. So I'd be looking at someone like in Columbus, I'd be the vulture circling there at Gavrikov, and not a sexy name like Carlson, but that's a guy that you can play in your top pair and who just shuts it down and who gave the Leafs fits when they played Columbus in that playoff series. That's has a really low cap hit. That would be really interesting to me.
Yeah. My contention would be, if I was going to play devil's advocate to this, is that you can get the heavier guy for cheaper, just like they did with Lyubushkin last year, where you go, okay, you went out and got somebody, and you can do that, I think, I don't want to say easily. I don't want to diminish it, because some teams go crazy, right? And they end up way, way, way overpaying for that guy, right? Exactly. Yeah. So the Sherratt trade is the one that comes to mind, where it's like a first-round pick went out the door for renting Ben Sherratt. It's wild. It's wild looking back on that. So, yeah, you might end up in a competitive market, but generally speaking, that comes at a lower cost. And if we're saying that this year is an all-in season to a certain degree, and you feel like, you know what, it's a flat cap, we're as talented as anybody, this is our best shot to win, maybe we don't worry about the final 2 years of the Carlson contract. If they eat a bunch of it, we just worry about this year and the next, the 2 years that we have guaranteed with Austin Matthews, and we try to optimize our roster by getting the best player available. Also, I wouldn't be the most adverse to them potentially. This, now we're into crazy, like, me on Leaf fan boards when in the early 2000s talk, but I wouldn't be adverse to them already shopping Morgan Riley and saying, yep, we thought he was the guy, but guess what? He's not. So we're bringing in Carlson and we're shipping him out and send us an offer. Just saying.
That's not happening.
I know it's not. I know it's not, but I like to believe at least in possibilities. James Myrtle, thanks for playing hurt today. I appreciate it. You gutted it out, just like apparently Lyubushkin has played in 11 of his 16 games, but he wasn't hurt, apparently, for that last one. He was scratched.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. I just know he's been fighting something, so.
Yeah.
That again, contract, this is according to my guy, Joe. Very well for them anyway. So,
yeah. Guess what? This is the thing with free agency. What contracts look great? That's not what free agency's for, especially in a flat cap era. James, thanks again for making time today, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you.
See you, pal. Senior editor at The Athletic. James Myrtle, always fun getting to do those. Much more composed fella than I am. Quick break. We'll come to the other side. I said it yesterday, Joe. You better been listening to the show because you didn't come in. I told you you didn't have
to. You told me not to come in. It's not like I didn't show up.
I know. But you better been listening to the show because I've got a thing about fishy lines now where I'm believing in the data, okay? I believe in Vegas is essentially my new move for betting in the NFL season. If something feels like I'm way too right, I'm probably wrong. I'm willing to accept that I am not as smart as Vegas, and especially right now. So I hope that you identified a tricky line or one that you felt was fishy, one that you felt like you could admit to yourself. I'm not as good as Vegas. So we'll do your fishy line and then how we're feeling heading into I think a pretty decent Thursday nighter tomorrow.
It's not bad. It has potential to be really entertaining.
Yeah, Austin's on the... Austin's like, we need this game. Austin, the Titans fan, ready. I love how on when you go to DraftKings, by the way, that when you click on it, it shows you like when the game is. It's like starts in one day. You're like, the countdown is on, Austin. All right, well, starts in one day. Anyways, that's next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
My buddy, Colby Armstrong, in 10 minutes. He's doing his tour of duty, father duties. We'll see if he's feeling as dad high as he was last week. Jobo, we're starting with Austin today. This is his team, all right?
Yep.
This is your team, Austin. I got to tell you, my chalk brain is completely flummoxed by this because I was out on the Packers. I was ready to be like, the Packers are dead. The players hate his guts, or hate Aaron Rodgers' guts. The Aaron Rodgers hates the coach. Lambeau doesn't mean anything anymore. I was fully... Man, I hope Dan Shulman didn't hear any of this because he'll never do the show again based on the way that I'm talking about his Packers. But the Titans are the toughest team for me to bet on because as much as I like them, as much as I just respect Vrabel, like they played the Chiefs in Arrowhead down to the final quarter with Malik Willis back there. A man who paid his agent to film him as he gave a homeless guy some money.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah, allegedly. It was a real alleged. Random, very random Malik Willis. That probably boosted his draft spot. Titans, you got to wonder about that video for the rest of your life as he throws no passes.
Certainly wasn't the film.
Titans are 6-3, though. Like, they're going on the road. It's a short week. They're a physical team. They're banged up. How many starters were you missing this week? Five? Seven?
Five for sure confirmed. It could be as many as 10 defensive starters out, though.
It could be 10 defensive starters out for this game.
It could be. Yeah, 10 are listed on the injury report currently. Five for sure confirmed out.
And Jeffrey Simmons is what?
Jeffrey Simmons is not playing. He's confirmed not playing.
Ankle injury. And yeah. Bud Dupree is also hip injury.
Yeah. Bud Dupree's always hurt.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was your classic. You shouldn't have signed that guy. Great pressure rate. All two games he played. And like the guy that is across from TJ Watt is probably never the guy you should pay. Like this is the Mike Komisarek rule is don't pay the guy that is playing next to a great player a huge amount of money.
With inflated stats. A little bit.
Anyway. I really want to bet the Titans here. I really do. But Tannehill was limited this week physically, and now it's a short week. I'm nervous. But you can run on the Packers, though. Like, this is so hard. How do you feel? Give me the feel, man. Come on. Don't be too much of a fan. Tell me the truth.
No, I'll tell you the truth, JD. I think your best availability, and Josiah can speak to this, your best ability is availability sometimes, and the Titans have no one available. Even with the offensive line,
yeah.
Ben Jones is missing for the Titans. PFF and ESPN have the Titans as the worst-ranked offensive line coming into this week with the players they have playing. So
yeah.
I don't like Derrick Henry's chances to run. I like the Packers -3. Think at home. Rodgers is back, baby. They just beat the Cowboys. Mojo's back. Christian Walken streaking down the field. Vertical threat. Whole new element to the Packers offense. I actually see them blowing out the Titans in this one.
Blowing out the Titans.
They have no one. There's no one playing. That team cannot score the ball. If the game gets over 17 points, the Titans are in a lot of trouble.
I'm going to be so pissed off if you guys drag me back into betting the Packers when I was finally out. This is literally Godfather. I did just what I think I'm out. You pull me back in. I was out. I was out on the Packers. After getting slaughtered by Packers bets all year long, here I am hearing from the Titans fan. And you're generally an optimistic Titans fan, hey?
No, I'd say I'm more of a pessimistic Titans
really?
Fan.
Really? Because you went to the Titans-Bills game and you wore your hoodie and then you were like, people are harassing me here. I went, yeah, man.
I got into a fight with a guy behind you.
Yeah. I love my Tennessee
Titans. Some little kid was harassing you, hey?
Yeah. Oh. People in Buffalo, very kind. Matt Marchese's cousin. He's a bit of a bully, but we'll leave it at that.
I thought you said he saved you.
No, Marchese saved me. Matt Marchese's cousin was bullying me.
Oh. What a jerk. Screw that guy.
You know, I may or may not have said some things to incur some wrath.
He instigated.
Oh, wow. I'm shocked by
Austin
that.
Austin instigated.
Yeah, Austin the instigator. So are we all in the Packers? We're all just back?
Yeah. This game is Green Bay written all over
it. The pack is back. That's what we're saying. by the way, we're doubting Vrabel, and this is going to cost us all.
Yeah.
This is all going to cost us dearly. We're like, Vrabel can't win, and he's going, yeah, this is the coach who said that he would, you know, sacrifice things. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it on the air. I got in trouble with something I said last week. So I say he said he would pay the ultimate sacrifice to win a Super Bowl. And I believe him. Honest to God, I truly believe him. And I think his players believe him. And that's why they just show up the way that they do.
They grind out results. The only three teams they've lost to have six or more wins.
Here's the one thing I would say. I think the Packers are going to win. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. But then you look at the Titans, too. It's like they're 6-3, but they've got more points against than points for.
Mm-hmm.
They only score around 18 points a week.
And they are 3-1 at home. Not big, big difference, 3-2 on the road. Who have they beat on the road this year? Do you know off the top of your head?
Texans, off the top of my head. They beat the Colts, too, in Indy. And I cannot remember the other one. Sorry.
They beat the Commanders.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Darn it. Sorry.
No, but I just... Yeah, you beat the Colts on the road, you beat the Commanders on the road, and you beat the Texans on the road. By 17-10, you beat the Texans.
Well, Derrick Henry, that was a Derrick Henry game.
One score beating the Colts, and one score beating the Commanders. Here's what I would say. The safer play is the Packers here, just because you kind of unequivocally know it's not going to be a blowout in Tennessee's direction. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I think we play this sucker. Anyways, let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's talk to the arm dog, Colby Armstrong. Next. Austin's gone full Hollywood. The guy forgets to tell me to do the time for action read because he gets on air and now he forgets Colby's intro song. This is why he fame goes to people's heads. It's just it's sad but true. It's sad but true. Colby Armstrong, the guy from Chicklets, etc. The man who, you know, what was it, 40 points in 46 games?
Yeah, 47 games.
47 games. You should have lied. You could have lied. You could have been like one of those games that was really out.
Well, it was that one game I almost had a Gordie Howe. Hey, did you hear about that?
Just now.
Oh, almost had a goal, almost had an assist, almost had a fight.
Almost. Nice. And today, you know, you just texted me that you made the rounds again. So now are you just addicted to being, you know, super dad? Like, is you just chasing that high? You're chasing the dragon for the rest of the month?
Well, it was hard getting up this morning, bud.
Uh-oh.
It was hard after the game last night. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you. Here in Pittsburgh, I don't know what they're thinking. People are going, what's going on with the Penguins? So I think everyone's kind of dragging their butts around town and their lips, you know, got the pouty lip going.
Yeah, it's tough because they are definitely, the Penguins fans are in that spot, right, where you couldn't just let Malkin and Letang walk, right? And then say, what were you supposed to say to Sidney Crosby then, right? Hey, thanks for the cups and being a generational talent. But we're done winning here. Like, then what? You're going to trade Sidney Crosby? This is just what sucks. And I was mentioning this off the top of the show. Like, this is the flat cap era where you can just age out of being a contender and there's really not too much you can do about it. I'm watching that Penguins team last night and I felt bad watching them because everybody wants... Like, I think that if you're a Canadian fan especially, you root for the Penguins. Like, you just do. You hope that they do well enough. At first, you hated them when it was Sid the Kid. You know, your teams, they hated. You know, everybody hated your teams. But then when you left, everyone was really stoked on the Penguins. After the golden goal, everybody was stoked on the Penguins. And seeing this is just, it's done, man. Like, it's not going to happen. Like, they're not winning. Like, that's not going down. I don't know what the path for them would be.
Well, for me, looking at it, I don't think it was bad to get those guys back. Like, I think like Gino's been their best player lately.
100%.
And his line
killed the Leafs in the first
game. Best. Yeah, and he's been good out of the gates this year. Like, he can rack up points, no question. But like, it's just his play has been really good, and his line with Jason Zucker and Raquel have been really good. Sid's line has like flatlined completely, which is really weird because. They're usually going, but I mean, it's easy to say like age with this team for sure, just because, but also like if you watch them play, like, I'm sorry, like just because you're you know, 35 years old and you can't pick up a defensive zone switch off and like check up on guys and check and you're not organized. Like there's a bigger issue there. It's just like, I look at the Penguins right now with their play and I'm like, who it's like Zoolander. Remember when he was like doing introspective thinking and he was like, who are you? Yeah. You know, he was looking in the mirror. It's like, that's what I think about. That's how crazy I am. That's what I think about when I think about the Pens right
now.
Just with their play.
Identity.
I'm like, who are you? Yeah, because it's even when they beat the Leafs the last time, it was like, who are you? Like, first period, awesome. Second period, who are you? Third period, what was that? You know, shut the Leafs down to four shots. And then, like, it's just every game, what are you going to get? What do they look like? What are they doing? What mistake will they make in puck management, decision making? You know, struggling to understand aggressiveness and checking and what gap to be in, kind of like just a second too late and unsure. So, you know, it started a few weeks ago. It started when they went out in the Western Canadian road trip and they haven't been able to get the wheels back on this, you know, this car right now. And it's wobbling all over the place. So they're scuffling big time right now.
Yeah. It hurt my feelings during the Sportsnet broadcast, or sorry, I think the other guys had last night, but during the broadcast last night, they go, they've got five guys on the team who were born in the 1980s. Wow. And I went, shut up. Shut up, idiots.
The greatest generation.
It's really good. It's a really good generation. It is a lot of sweet, sweet people that were born in that time. But it just hurt my feelings the way they said it. Like, can you believe this accomplishment that these guys are all there pulling this off together, these bag of bones crew that they're just able to still.
babies.
Like, shut up. Shut up. Everybody shut up. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. It's going to be.
Like, are they the oldest team in the league? I think they are, right? Like, on average.
Well, the way the broadcast said it about having five guys born in the 80s made me go, that's probably not.
That'll get the average up.
I was going to say that I don't feel like there's a lot of teams with five guys born in the 80s. Yeah, Austin just said it's the Penguins and Capitals. Like I said, the teams that aged out. The teams that the old dudes, they went, yeah, we have to just keep rolling over contracts because we got to keep this together. You're right. I don't know what else the Penguins are supposed to do. I don't think I'm being critical of them, but this is sort of what I think happens a bit when you're a team built around elite players and they set the tone for your entire organization. It just must be tough watching kind of like, Sid lose a bit of a step. And yeah, Malkin looks phenomenal. Like, he just looks like Malkin on a lot of different shifts. But yeah, to me, it actually has been, at least in these two games that I've watched the Leafs and the Penguins, I'm used to watching Crosby every single shift just go, oh my God, this is terrifying. Oh my God, this is terrifying. He's in the offensive zone. He's impossible to get the puck off of. I don't know how much of it is a line mate thing, whatever. It might just be a funk. He got that beautiful pass from Rasmus Sandin right to him. That was nice. He went, thank you for this, Rasmus. Like, that was sweet. That's one for the score sheet. But outside of that, it's just, this is the first time where I've really watched Sid and gone, I didn't really notice him too much tonight. And that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, even in the game in Toronto a week ago, it was like, or a few days ago, it was kind of the same. So yeah, the line just isn't clicking, and it's weird because like their game is big time on like offensive zone puck possession and like cycling and having guys on your hip and you know, Gensel as well is like a smaller player, but like he's real shifty and crafty and spins off guys and gets in hard areas, can make those little plays, and you know, they get like in the offensive zone when they're rolling, it's like they start buzzing off of those cycle plays and those little pop plays to an opportunity, to a puck retrieval, to another couple passes, and they just start swarming and swirling. And they can't even pass through the neutral zone right now. It's like in the skates, it's all over the place with them and Rust. So there's just like an off look. I don't know what it is with the chemistry with them, because it's hard to go like, does it just disappear like that? Like, what happens? Excuse me, what happens to, you know, a line like this that you know, has been so dominant for so long? And like, Russ wasn't even on the line to start the year. It was Raquel up there, and then due to some injuries and some scuffling play with some of the other, they flip-flopped Russ and Raquel, and then Gino's line took off and Sid's line started to scuffle. So yeah, it's been I think frustrating, I think for the coaching staff, for the players, I think for the fans. You know, watching just because usually by this time in a season, at least in the last you know, I guess we could say like 10 years, which is hilarious, but you know what the Penguins are.
Yep.
And just right now, I just think, you know, it's like, who are you is still left on the table because it's just been that kind of a start for them.
Well, yeah, they're 2-6-2 in their last 10, and now they're below 500.
Well, their power play too in their last 8 games. The first 8 games, it was great. They had like 8 goals, and now they have 2 goals in their last 8 games, and they can't even. I mean, last night they had a couple power plays out of their 3. Their last 2 were
good.
Like they generated some chances and probably should have scored a couple times. Were unable to, but it's going at 9%. 9% power play. You got Sid, Gino, Letang, Rust, Malkin. Like how does that happen? So. That the special teams, they're starting to get their penalty kill going a little bit better, but like the power play has not positively impacted a game. Let's just say, like, I always look at it, and the Leafs, I think, have this luxury as well, just because of the firepower they have and the players they have. It's like, oh, you can play like junk, or you can have an off game and score 2 power play goals and like somehow win 3-2. You know what I mean? Like it can buy you a lot of leash just by having a good power play. And I've seen the Penguins do that in years past where the power play is just like, that wasn't a great game, but they scored 2 power play goals and won or got a point in overtime and, you know, saved themselves. So it's something that's just, it's not positively impacting them at all. In fact, it's probably negatively impacting them more than anything in the last several games.
No, man, that was, again, they wore those beautiful sweaters last night. That was the highlight of the game. And then, yeah, Sid gets a cookie from Sandy. That was great. There was like no fans. There was no juice in the arena. Like,
no, there was like no fans.
What's
there.
Up
it was
with that?
Weird. Yeah.
That, for a Leafs
I
game
don't know.
Too. Has it been
well,
like that this year?
We have big construction here for anyone that from Toronto that wants to come down and catch games. I saw a bunch of Leaf fans here last night, but it's only like a 5-hour drive.
Yeah.
Nice, easy drive. And so we have like a lot of construction going on. They're building like a huge, like it's like where the old Mellon Arena is. It's going to be like a huge area with the, you know, condos and restaurants and businesses and a new area to do like concerts and stuff. So it's going to be awesome. But right now, it's so compacted. I think, I don't know if the traffic kind of scares people away. They're doing a pretty good job at funneling people in. But, yeah, it was just a really light night last night for, you know, having Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Tavares, Nylander in town. You know, Matt Murray gets his first start in Pittsburgh as well since, you know, leaving here. Who played, you know, I think he played really good. I think Matt played really good, gave him a good chance. Like, when he had to get flopping, he did. He's usually not, like, a massive flopper. Like he's more of like a blocker kind of goaltender, but he made some incredible like scrambling saves at times to keep pucks out in dangerous situations. But yeah, it was light crowd. It was for sure. That's the first thing I noticed. I'm like, oh, maybe it's just traffic or maybe it's something, but no,
it was bad. They shot up like when the cameras were showing the 100 levels, especially you're like, oh my God, there's nobody here. And it was just especially weird because yeah, the Leafs fans travel so well that just about every single arena that, you know, you watch them play.
Usually it's a gong show too.
That's
yeah,
I mean.
Like with Leaf fans, it's usually like we do our post-game, Penguins post-game show, like right on the concourse in the one
section. And they're yelling.
Oh, and it's insane. It's like borderline, it's borderline. Like, I'm like, this is embarrassing. Yeah, they're just yelling at me like, hey!
Well, I love
I'm
it like, too that you do nuts. That, and then it's just the only guys that are doing that are whoever drank 8 beers at the game, you know, and they're going, I'm getting my money's worth. I drank, $100 worth of beer.
There was someone there with an old number 9 Armstrong Leafs jersey. I think I was the last guy to wear 9 before they actually went from honoring to retiring, and I got to wear my old junior number when I switch it.
9 is nice.
The old jinxy curse, but it was, it's a nice looking, it's a real hockey number, isn't it?
It's a really nice number because you're not, it's kind of like you get a lot of the juice of 19 without being a showboat about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's like, think of all the greats that ever worn it. You know, it's nice to be linked with those guys. So
in the blue and white too. Like that's,
I know.
Yeah. That's legit. You know what I'm telling you though, if I was going to have one of your sweaters, I'd want Thrasher's 100%. Like no.
Thrasher's the red one with the 20 on the front.
No
question.
That was
like so bad.
No, dude, actually, you know what? That's kind of funny.
You want powder blue.
Damn, they're both so good. The powder blue is what I had in my mind.
With
but
Atlanta
then
down the arm?
Oh, that's so sick. I got so embarrassed like not too long ago. I was at a bar, and I saw a guy wearing, I think it was a Kovalchuk Thrashers, and I was just bombed, and I just did the classic go up to him because I'm a sports guy, and I went like, that's a sick, that's a sick jersey, man. And he just looked at me like, ew. And I went, oh, you're not even going to give me like the acknowledgement? You know, it just, it was tough. It was tough. I hated it.
Can you imagine? You were so bombed. You probably had a dart behind your ear. Like you were ready to wheel out of there.
Yeah, I know. I was like, bonding moment. Like, you know, fist bump. And it's like, no, nothing, man, nothing. Just this guy was young, and he probably didn't even know who the dude was. It just, it's like, I don't even know what you're, he looked at me like he didn't know what I was talking about. Yeah. Or like he was like, I'm not even wearing this sweater. It sucked. And I just walked away.
Oh, you should have jerseyed him and just started throttling him. Show me some respect.
Yeah, exactly. Just immediately. Yeah, that'd have been good. That'd have been good. You know what? Actually, that probably would have been good for my career. Now that I think about it, it'd been like bar fight, punches out guy in Kovalchuk jersey. He's like, I was like, you didn't respect me. That would be
barfights.com, number one tilt of the day.
So I was going to say to you though, just because we're here, I want to ask you a couple other things. I want to touch on Murray, and I got a Tavares thing for you. But speaking of like that empty arena last night, do you remember good games in Atlanta? Like, do you remember games where there was like real energy in the building? Like, they must have stuck out. Like, did you have a time where you went, oh my God, I can't believe we got fans for this? Like, did they have some weird promotion where you got to get like a free car wash and a bunch of people showed up?
You know what I remember like the most when we played, you know, like an original six team usually? I would be driving to the game in Atlanta and I'd be like passing cars full of people in like Bruins or Rangers or Detroit Red Wings jerseys, like just piling in. And like the traffic's pretty heavy there getting into downtown, and it just like cars upon cars of their fans. And then you get there and come out for warmups, and there's like, you know, 20 fans at our end watching us warm up, and like the other end zone for warmups is just completely, the whole bowl is rammed on their side. It's like Gretzky's in town or something. Yeah. But it was just because it's such a transplant like city, right? Like people go there to work and then they still love their team. So when they came to town, especially those ones with the big fan bases, it was nuts. Like, for example, like I remember my buddy surprised me for my birthday, which is coming up, by the way. Yeah. I'm going to turn 40 right away, but my wife like helped plan like for a couple of my buddies to come down for like a surprise birthday visit, hangout, guys trip. And I'm in warm up skating around, and like there's my buddy, just like the only guy standing on the glass. Like he like waves at me. I'm like, oh, hey, what's up, man? I could see him like perfectly. Like it wasn't even hard to like pick him out. He was just like standing there. I'm like, oh, my buddy Rusty's here. Sweet. Yeah. What's up, Rusty?
He can just talk to you during the game. Like you can hear everything he's saying to you. Like skate.
He's like, hey, Army, what's up, man? Like over the glass. I'm like, hey, how you doing? Yeah. Full blown conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hilarious.
You don't even really have to yell. It's just the PA system. Like if the music's a little too loud, that's the only reason that you have to elevate your voice in any way. He's just right there. That's amazing.
Like during the game, I look up, I'm like, oh, Rusty's over there in the suite area. Sweet. I can just see where he's going. You can completely track him
when you're on the bench. Like, what's he going to get? Oh, is he getting a pretzel?
Oh, look at Rusty. He's enjoying himself. This is great. And I'm like giving him, I'm like, Rusty, go over there. It's a great buffet in that lounge over there.
You're pointing from the bench.
I can see him
totally
easily.
Fine. I love that. So you said it though. Matt Murray played pretty well. He makes a lot of, so I watched the game with McKee last night. We did Leafs talk after, and we were dying. We were laughing because it just, his equipment is so big. Like he's a skinny guy.
I know
he's tall, but it's just how, I don't understand how that's like up to code.
He's upper body. Like, you know him, you've seen him. He's like really skinny.
That's what I mean.
He's tall.
Inside that equipment.
Body equipment is huge.
Man, it's massive. I was joking about how, do you remember when Ron Wilson called out the Spezza stick and we found out that Spezza was like, you know, had the illegal curve? Do you remember that?
I don't remember
That happened.
Great.
And I was joking yesterday too about it because I thought now that we know Spezza cares so much about his sticks, it was kind of like he knew, you know, it was very much, he was in on the cheat move, you know, he wasn't like, what? You know, it's like that guy, every clip you ever get of Spezza, like every Sean McKenzie Spezza story was like, and this guy loves screwing around with his sticks. And you're like,
The first thing I ever remembered of Spezza was at the Prospects game. I don't know if I've told this story really before, but seeing him for the first time was like so cool because you only heard about him, like exceptional status, and this guy's name somehow traveled around. This is like pre-internet. Saw it on probably like Coach's Corner or something.
Yeah, he did.
Hear his name.
Grapes was obsessed
with
him.
And then you got, like, you know, the hockey news, and there'd be like a junior section. It'd be like a, you know, one piece spread out of them where you'd see it. And you're like, oh, that's the guy. So he came to the prospects game to Calgary my draft year. Mm-hmm. And I was watching him, and he had like his old wood stick, and he was like, Spez was like working on his stick for like an hour before the game. It was crazy, like the work he put in. He was like rasping, you know, like one of those wood rasps where it like just scrapes off a little bit of wood. Mm-hmm. He was like rasping his, like, the butt end of his like knob down, so it was like really skinny. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting, because I just took my stick and I like just taped it up. And he was like such an artist with his stick. It was crazy to see. He was definitely like a woodworking legend back in the day with those old wood sticks. He had it going on pretty good. He'd take a lot of time on it, but I was watching him like, there he is. There's the guy from TV and the hockey news. Holy God, that's the guy everyone's talking about. There he is working on his stick.
I love that.
Cool to see him in real life.
Yeah, there he is, the guy from the hockey news. That's what we all say still to this day.
Hey, man, you know what's crazy, though? Like, but Michael Bunting only has 3 goals this year. It's kind of crazy, hey?
Yeah, well, it's not...
Good game for him yesterday, but, like, it's just not... crazy to see who he plays with and where he is and, like,
the
kind of game
down,
he has and the complimentary player he kind of is. Like, you think he'd just be chipping around the net, like, with a few... Oh, sorry, 4 goals. He has 4 goals. But he'd be chipping in with, like, more goals, you know?
So he talked about it yesterday at practice before the game, or at the pregame skate, sorry, about how he needed to get back in front of the net. He takes a beating in front of there, man. Like, you know, he's not a huge guy. Like, and he just, every game he gets mauled. And now last year, I'll say this, and respectfully, he's a diver, okay? Like, he's an embellisher in a big-time way. And last year he was, like, leading the league in penalties, and the refs probably... During the offseason, they got together and went, look at how many plays we called for this guy where he embellished in front of the net. And now this year, it's like he can't buy a call. So I do wonder if there was a little part of him the last little bit where when he said that, it was just he's tired of just getting a beating there and not getting rewarded with goals or with penalties.
Yeah.
And so last night, he kind of went back and did his own thing. So that was nice to see. But yeah, that was big for him. But the guy I wanted to really talk to you about was Tavares, because he had a little extra pep in the step last night. And, you know, he was in that division for a long time. You know, like, there have been some Penguins Islanders games, and I know there was always the little bit of, hey, you're not Sid, between him and the Penguins. And I kind of wondered last night during the intermission, right, during the first intermission, Tavares is talking to the media. He's talking to the reporter about the goal, right? And he mentioned Sid twice. And it wasn't like, and then Sid didn't do this, but he mentioned him twice. He's like, and then I noticed Sid, and I went, and I kind of wondered if he turned it up a notch last night because Sid was there too. And, like, that's a guy that he wants the validation from, he wants the respect from. And, like, yeah, that well, Tavares game was for Sid. Like, he dedicated it
like
to him.
Yeah, like, I think, like, like, high-end guys like the challenge of playing against other high-end guys. Like, I just think that's something they want to compare their game to, like, rising the challenge, but playing against them, matching up against them, you know, outplaying them, outworking them, you know, outshining them. And I think that kind of drives guys. Like, forever, how long have we seen, like, when was it last year? Like, oh my God, Connor McDavid with a 4-point night. And then, like, the next night it's like, Austin Matthews, 5 points.
Yeah, like, back like, it's when like Matthews
dueling
cared.
Superstars, you know? And it's like, I think they like to, you know, put the pressure on themselves to rise up in those kinds of situations versus each other in a even far away way too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think Tavares' game is not like a super flashy game. I think he's just like a rock steady, consistent, strong player and good in his areas and small areas and traffic and battles. But total mix-up hiccup on the goal that he got. You know, the last few years, how many times on how many teams do the high guy? And there's just like a complete, like, Petrie either has to go out to him or Sid has a guy down low and then he has to check off and try to get all the way out to... It was a complete cluster, but, I mean, Tavares, perfect spot, ripped it in, been consistent
the whole
this year.
He must have, like, we were
the whole net.
He looked at that, and he went, I can't believe that's the whole net. That's
that would have hit that would have hit Murray's like that would have hit Murray's like pec because his upper body equipment's so big it would just like hit him.
Yeah, do you remember when there's that picture of Darren Pang getting in Ben Bishop's equipment and it's just like the funniest picture ever? It's like I want to see Panger next. In Pang should just do a series of every year he takes a picture in the biggest goalies like the biggest equipment and Matt Murray would 100% win. Like that. Like I want to see Panger in his chest protector. You know, like let's see that thing go over Pang's whole body. You know, like
it would look like Dana Carvey doing that turtle character.
It's so big. I can't get over it. Every time I'm out there, I'm going, that's a really skinny guy under there. Like that's a really skinny guy.
Like
the
first time I ever really saw that was I remember playing against like the Sabres and you know, Ryan Miller, and he's like he's like a taller guy, not super tall. Like Murray's like much taller than him,
Murray's
but like
six,
he's really
six,
skinny.
Eh?
Yeah, he's really tall. But like you know, Miller's like a pretty big guy, but like in his equipment, I remember he looked so big, and then I saw him like off the ice one time. I'm like, oh my God, that's him.
Yeah.
He's so like, he looks so big in his equipment. He's so skinny. I was just like, holy good. Not like he looks like there's nothing to shoot at with him in there. And then I see him off the ice. Dude. Like how am I this bad at shooting?
No, that's what's so funny about Matt Murray. That's what's so hilarious about the equipment is that you look at him and you're like, that must be a big fat guy under there. It's like, no, man, he's tiny little rail. Like somehow, somehow that's allowed. That's just, that's the way it is. I don't even want to talk about it anymore because I feel like somebody might be listening to this and they're like, why don't we check on the size of that guy's equipment? And then I'm going to be a pariah.
I think they get checked all the time.
Yeah. I mean, his has to be because there's no way that he ever stepped out on the ice and one coach with half a brain was like, check. Like, you know,
I got to say though, that probably felt really good for him last night coming into Pittsburgh.
To,
I mean,
didn't get hurt.
Battling through another injury, like nothing, like he's had a tough last few years. Right. And, you know, he hasn't been back and started a game in Pittsburgh since leaving. So for him, I imagine, you know, coming in. Like the cool thing about Pittsburgh and the thing I noticed even being back here when I first quit playing and came back, it's like from when I was here, it's like all the same people like still work here, even at the old Mellon Arena. They're all at the new arena. And it's like just seeing like all the familiar faces. And I heard in some of his comments after the pregame skate, like just seeing all the same people. It was like nice to see. So I'm sure it felt really good for him to be back and have a good performance and get a win and be back in the net again. So, I mean, he was a big part of teams here, you know, in Stanley Cups and, you know, big part of a lot of success that was here. So I'm sure it felt really good for a guy like him to come back and bounce back from another injury and get the start and get the win against his old team in their barn.
Hell yeah. These last two games teach you anything about the Leafs? Like, do you feel any differently about them? Has there been anything that you've come away from? Yeah, okay. I just want to check.
No, like, I think, I don't know. I think it's just like when you look at the Leafs, like, tell me this still, because I said this to myself. I'm like, do you see a team that's going to win in the playoffs?
Here's the thing I was saying today. I kind of feel like this
that's
year,
what I keep going to.
But this year,
maybe
yes.
I'm jumping fast a lot of it, but
just everybody sucks, man. Like there's no good teams. Like everybody
I know, like
sucks.
This is the year to be, this is the year. I mean, Boston, right? You
They're
can look
fine.
At Boston,
Boston's
but this
all right.
is like a strange year where like some teams have quieted down and everyone's kind of like leveled out a bit. It's like, what's going to happen this year? This is a year that might be, you know, a great setup for some teams and like see what they can do or how healthy they can stay or if it all falls together like always. But you're right. I think this year it's just like, oh man, this is like a flatlined year where there's a lot of teams that are like the same.
Okay. So I think that I'm hoping this is an early take. This is the first time I'm giving you this take.
Let's hear this.
I'm hoping that this year is like throw it back to 2003 NHL trade deadline day where it's just sexy and that teams are going, we don't care. We're spending stuff. Because all the loser teams should be thinking, we want to get to the top of the draft. We want to be in the Bedard sweepstakes, and everybody's too decent, and it's just too flat. It just, this is why the cap sucks so much. But trying to figure out ways to either like eat salary or get super creative, and teams like really start to bid up.
Yeah.
And that the good teams find creative ways with eating cap, knowing that maybe it's going to go up in a year from now or whatever, that they're going to be willing to tank for a little bit longer because it is so flat and there is so many just so unspectacular teams. And I'm hoping that we get like
are we going to see like a lot of like Kucherovs, like, oh, IR until playoffs?
I hope so, because dude, I'm telling you right now, this has been a flat out boring season. Like watching games from around the league, there's two fun teams. Like there's two, like the Devils are fun, right?
Yeah.
Like the Devils are the fun team, and that's cool.
Hughes's comment the other day.
Yeah, but that's.
Oh my God, I loved it with the like. He's like, we're on a 9-game heater. Yeah. He did that like little laugh at the end.
Dude, the Golden Knights are fun. The Devils are fun. Everybody else looks flat, sucks.
The Sabres were fun. They kind of started falling off.
Man, the Kraken are already like, the Kraken are doing good. You know, like everybody's flat. There's no bad team. Like, I don't know, man. I want to have a sport where it feels like some teams are special, some teams are built right, not just everybody got a couple of good guys and then the rest of their roster is filled with like the $1 million dudes. Like, I just, the NHL needs a lift somehow this year. Like they need some kind of a boost. And I think that maybe that comes, hopefully that comes at trade deadline and teams get a little creative. Teams get a little hungry.
We need the return. We need the return of the lunatics in hockey, like the reckless abandoned players, 100%. Like, you know, the guys that are, you know, we saw the Janot fight with Reeves the other night. We're seeing some more of this start to uptick a little. Like, are we coming back with the crazy guys? Let's go.
Something.
We need
please.
It.
Something. Something. Give us something. 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 But yeah, I want those crazy trades. Like the one I always think of is the Keith Tkachuk. That was like a wild one because it was like they traded him to the Thrashers, if you remember, for like a first and a third round pick and a second round pick. And it was like, whoa, Keith Tkachuk's an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year. Like, and he's getting long in the tooth. And they were like, we don't care. We're going for it. I want those kind of
trades. Yeah, they went for it. Then they're like, give us Alexei Zhidnik for Braden Coburn.
It's like it was.
They're like, Braden Coburn's 19. Like, what do you mean? He's like a high draft pick, like prospect. Oh, no, we're going for it. Then they got swept in the first round by the Rangers. Yep. The first time and only time they ever made the playoffs.
Yep, but they went for it. You know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think that some teams got to go for it this year. That's what I'm hoping for. Go for it year.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, I think that's what the Pens need to do, too. I think you just got to. Because you know what? Like, what do you want it to have happen?
I don't know.
The thing is like, what do you want to have happen? You want to win, and then you want to suck. Then you want to suck. And then you want to draft, and then you got to build towards it again. Everyone's got to do it. Like I feel like some teams get away with it, with holding on for a few more years after, and like, oh, how did they do this? Oh my God, they lost so many guys, and they won, and like Chicago, you know. But now look at them.
No, I get it.
It's just a matter of time. It's just how long can you just push it and like, you know.
I don't know if they can. I don't know if they can keep pushing it because when I'm just looking at the four teams at the very top of the Metro and it's Devils, Islanders, Hurricanes, Rangers. Like, who are you going to jump over? I don't know if I see that for Pittsburgh this year. Something like drastic would need to change. Yo, buddy, this was always fun. I hope that you had a good dad high today. I hope that you're feeling like you get a little bit more awake. You feel a little bit better. We got a lot of texts, got a lot of reviews, like good stuff from dad high. A lot of dads really like that. Really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. God, give the dads some love out there. Everyone's just trying to get it done. Like, we don't know what the hell we're doing, but we're doing it. And like, if we do anything kind of good, we're so proud. We're so proud, dad high.
You should be. Colby Armstrong, thanks for making time, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right. Keep kicking butt, all you dads out there. Thanks, buddy.
See, nice little pump up right at the end. That classic from that guy. Forgot to do at the other side because, again, Austin, the diva, the Mike Kraken diva. It's time for action, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in on the action. Must be 19 plus. Must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. The gang is rolling with the Packers this week. That seems to be the consensus. I reserve the right to change my mind tomorrow, especially when we do our prop parlays. That was time for action, brought to you by DraftKings, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in on the action. Must be 19 plus, must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. Quick break, and then what we missed with Jobo.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Winter just came, huh?
Very quickly.
Yeah. I was on the patio last week. Legit. I had a jacket on and there was a heat lamp, but it was nice. And I was drinking ice cold Bud Lights. Like, I was not drinking hot toddies, okay? Like, I was having ye old regular, you know? Go to. It was that kind of night. Like, I want to drink a million of something. And that was that time. And now all of a sudden, I keep my windows open in my place, like, all the time, you know? I like fresh air, you know? Yeah. I'm a big fresh air guy. That's so what I always say. Yeah, fresh air. And then, like, yesterday morning when I woke up, it was... miserable, miserable time. I did the chatter, you know, the holy crap. I can't get out of bed because it's too cold.
Yeah.
Someone's got to come to the apartment, close all the windows, let it heat up for a little while. And then we will discuss me leaving this bed. Anyway, be safe out there. Drive slow.
It was like 18 degrees, like a week and a half ago.
That's what I'm saying.
I was outside in a t-shirt.
This is a war. From the weather. This is an assault. Ease people in. This was no easing. This was no ease. This was aggressive. This is war. This is war. War with the weather.
Yeah.
Anyways, what'd we miss?
Well, the Blue Jays are getting active. Raimel Tapia and Bradley Zimmer designated for assignment. They're bringing up some prospects. Guys like Addison Barger, Spencer Horowitz, Aurelvis Martinez, Yasver Zelueta added to the 40-man roster. And John Morosi had some tweets, and he was talking to MLB Network yesterday about what they could do with Teoscar Hernandez and some other potential moves that they could be doing.
The Jays are doing things.
They're doing things.
They're in the news cycle. Hit it.
Is Teoscar Hernandez, who I think is one of the best trade candidates out there this offseason. Harold, I agree.
I'm in on that, Bill.
It's a little surprising, but bear with me. He is entering the final year of his contract before free agency, so the Jays have some decisions to make. They also have what we would agree is a very right-handed dominant lineup. And they were exposed against Luis Castillo in the playoffs where they just didn't have enough different looking at bats, especially from the left side. So with Hernandez entering free agency after this season and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. as well, there is a belief that one of the two could be moved to either bring in a pitcher or get a bit more left-handed or both.
So he goes on to say that the Seattle Mariners would be interested in that. And he tweeted out that they've discussed a possible Teo for Chris Flexen trade.
Yeah, I'd rather die.
Yeah.
So anyway, no. Please, God, no. And now this Chris Flexen trade can't happen because of the strong position that I've taken on this. And, like, I just can't. But, man, this guy was in Korea, a couple of years ago. Not to say guys haven't come from there, but... to me, Chris Flexen is the kind of guy where the numbers are not, like, he's a fourth starter on a good team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you guys have big Chris Flexen memories from the playoffs? Oh, wait. I guess they'd only play two games. But even still, this is not the take. This is not the guy. This is not the one. I hope that's not, this has to be what Seattle would be offering.
Mm-hmm.
I know Teo's only on 1-year deal. But there is no way you could convince me that the Blue Jays are better off having Flexen than Teoscar Hernandez next year if they want to win.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no way.
Morosi did also tweet out that
Wait a second. Make sure it's a real account.
I'm looking at it right now.
Is it real?
I'm looking at it right now.
Is it real?
It is real.
And so Teo's traded.
He's not traded. They've discussed.
No, Austin just got in my ear.
Austin got in your ear.
Sorry. So Jeff Passan 6 minutes ago, breaking all-star outfielder Teoscar Hernandez has been traded to the Seattle Mariners from the Toronto Blue Jays. Sources familiar with the deal tell ESPN that is a verified Jeff Passan account as well.
Please, God, no.
Oh, my goodness.
No word on the return yet. I will keep my eye open, and I will try to get that to you.
Unbelievable.
What? Now it just popped up for me, too.
It happened.
I was making sure the Morosi account was real. Passan snuck up on me.
It's the real Passan account.
It is the real Passan account. Teoscar Hernandez traded to the Seattle Mariners.
I got to tell you, this is kind of heartbreaking. This is my initial reaction without seeing what's returning. I'm a little nervous about it being Flexen, especially given that Morosi is a man in the know, and I don't think that he would have just thrown that name out there without without any type of, God, this is the worst. Having to do this stuff live where you can't collect. It is fun, but it's also the worst. Teo, this is my Teo take. It has been for a while. The defense from time to time would just infuriate you. Like, he would just have some brain dead moments in the field that I really think prevented him from being loved on a different level. I'm really not sure what a contract for Teoscar Hernandez would have looked like that made sense, but it always felt like he was the guy that might end up getting pushed out here. Because one, Gurriel has just a little bit more control and is cheaper. Two is, I think if you move George Springer out of center field ever to like give him the extra rest or try to take off a little bit of wear and tear, whatever, it was always to right field and to DH. Like, you can't just have him be the regular everyday DH. So I do think that there will come an eventual time where Springer has to take that spot. So you've already allocated the money there. I never thought that, unfortunately, I never thought that Teoscar was going to end up getting a long-term deal with the Blue Jays. That being said, he is one of the best trades of the Shapiro Atkins era. They got him from Houston for a song. I think it was Liriano, right? Like, it really was an awesome trade. A power hitter who came here and refined his approach at the plate, got sent down and became an awesome story for the Blue Jays. Like, a genuinely fun guy to watch. Just exuberant personality, joyful power. That's the way I'm always going to remember Teoscar Hernandez as a Blue Jay. I get it where they were at in terms of them being under the gun to not just let him walk in a free agency for nothing. I get it from the standpoint of it's a way to reconfigure your roster a little bit, as it even says in that clip, to get a little less right-handed, to get a little less all or nothing at the plate. But before seeing what's coming back in this trade, I will say that if it is just Chris Flexen, I think you took a step back for this season.
Morosi also did tweet out that Seattle was prepared to trade Jesse Winker as well in the offseason.
Yeah.
So if it's Flexen and Winker, does that make it better for you personally?
Baseball is something where I do need more, like, you do need more time to think about it. But mm-hmm. Jesse Winker, again, like, I'm pretty familiar with the Mariners. Like, he was an all-star in 2021 mm-hmm. and a guy that OPS'd, I believe, under 700 last year.
Mm-hmm. He had a weird year for sure.
So, yeah, like, is he a player that is a buy low, could end up being decent candidate? Sure.
Bats left, too.
Yeah, no, ultimately, what I am a believer in is, yes, balance is important, but ultimately, if you're trying to win, you should try to have as many plus war dangerous mm-hmm. players as you can. And let's not forget why the Blue Jays looked like they had a chance to win against the Mariners this year. Mm-hmm. It was the bat of Teoscar Hernandez.
Mm-hmm. On several
Austin,
occasions.
Do you have the stuff? Okay, sorry, It's just hard for me to envision. I hate doing this right now because I don't know what's coming back. This is so stupid. Like,
I keep refreshing past.
I know, but
Twitter,
I'm just telling you right now that my gut feeling is I'm going to really miss Teoscar Hernandez. That's all I can tell you right now. Mm-hmm. That I think that there were times where he was an underappreciated player in the city, that I think that it was the defense that held him back. It also happened to be like the players that he coincided with, right? He had really fun, incredible seasons across from the Jays bringing up Vladdy and Bo and you getting to see them. He came up and across the pandemic season where they're playing in Buffalo and we're watching games without any fans.
And Dunedin.
Yeah. But ultimately, yeah, he was one of the more enjoyable Blue Jays success stories, in my opinion, of at least the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like, really, really cool story of a guy they traded for, they identified, they grabbed from the Astros. By the way, that's the other part of this is how good the Astros are, that they've lost guys like Musgrove. And I know the Jays had Musgrove first, but like they had lost Teoscar Hernandez. They're just like, we're World Series champs. No, with a bullet. We don't even think about it.
It just spawned in Jeremy Peña out of nowhere.
But yeah, I had a lot of time for Teoscar Hernandez. And yeah, I think that this is a real, boy, this is a real difficult one to swallow, because I can appreciate how this is the right time, the right move. It is some asset management here. It is a way of, again, changing the complexion of your roster to not be so one-dimensional. I don't want to say one-dimensional, but yeah, a little bit more predictable at the plate.
Mm-hmm.
It's a guy who is occupying a spot that you'd like to be able to put George Springer someday, as I mentioned, or even just have more flexibility. Like with the DH, he's not a guy that you ever trusted defensively. That's important to this team. That's one of the things that they wanted moving forward. It was going to be really, really, really difficult to give him a contract. But trading him to the team that just beat you in the postseason is a little icky.
A little bit.
Like, they watched that game and went, you know, Teo would be sweet to have.
Yeah.
Like, you think about the top of their order right now, too. It's pretty spooky. It's pretty scary. It's weird to see two teams that are like competing for that same position of next tier competitor, right? Mm-hmm. Because the Astros are going to be the favorite going into the next year again in the American League. That's just the way that it is.
Yep.
The Yankees, who knows what happens with Judge, but it's hard to envision them losing him still and them taking a step back.
Yep.
You'd imagine that a healthier season, hopefully, from the Rays is going to put them in a bit of a better position. Like, they're still a team that you don't anticipate is going to take a big step back. It's just weird. It's just strange. It's just strange to think about moving off of a guy with that type of talent when you're trying to win. And again, I really do think, like, this guy, this is one of those things. This is one of those things with Teo. This is a classic you don't know what you got till it's gone scenario here.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, he never really felt properly. I know that this always kind of sounds like a bit of a sports radio thing where you go, he wasn't properly appreciated. It's like, people love Teoscar Hernandez, okay? Like, I get it. He got a pop. He was appreciated. He was loved. But he was like a, you know, for what he brought this team and for what his story was, it never felt like he was embraced quite like other sluggers have been. I think a lot of people kind of always felt like the floor was going to fall out below Teoscar Hernandez. But like, yeah, he got down ballot MVP votes in two of his seasons with the Blue Jays. He finished 11th and he finished 19th. Like, one is that 2020 year, right? Where it's only 50 games or whatever it was. How many games was it? I can't even remember, but 60 games. Yeah, it wasn't 50.
60.
But yeah, made the All-Star game in 2021. And a guy who, across his tenure with the Blue Jays, had an 823 OPS.
Two-time Silver Slugger.
Mm-hmm. And he hit 130 bombs here. Anyways, we'll break it down a little bit more tomorrow once we have the full details of what exactly happened here today. But yeah.
What a way to end the show.
Yeah, no, just kind of depressing.
That was a nuke.
Also kind of fun to wonder about what the possibility of this could be, but yeah.
You hope it's not Chris Flexen, like, not just him.
I don't think it will be. I'm guessing that, here's my guess, is that relief pitching will come back and maybe, like, it's going to be things that the team needs, and I just don't think that you pay a Teoscar Hernandez for a Chris Flexen, not alone. I'm guessing that it'll be help. Like, it'll be from that. Mariners have a loaded bullpen. Don't forget that. Like, they have a lot of arms. Maybe it's someone from there. Maybe that makes it a little bit better. I don't know. It's just tough to think about how they're going to end up getting immediately better from this. We'll see you tomorrow.